You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. Coming up Monday at 7:30 on The Morning Show, there's a state Supreme Court race going on, and you can meet the candidates. All three primary contenders will join the show over the course of next week. It starts Monday morning at 7:30 here on the Ideas Network. Now, President Trump celebrated his Senate acquittal yesterday in a more than hour-long speech from the White House. Here's a listen.
We've been going through this now for over 3 years. It was evil. It was corrupt. It was dirty cops. It was leakers and liars. And this should never, ever happen to another president, ever.
A number of prominent Republicans were there to celebrate with the president. Now there's news that some GOP lawmakers are starting an investigation into Hunter Biden and his dealings in Ukraine. Meanwhile, we still don't have a winner from Monday night's Democratic Iowa caucuses. Democratic National Committee Chair Tom Perez is calling for some of the results to be re-canvassed. David Cannon is professor of political science at UW-Madison. David, thanks for joining us.
Good to be with you.
Super busy national news week, which seems to happen a lot lately.
This to have three sort of major events back to back to back with the State of the Union, Iowa, and the impeachment vote. Yeah, it was quite the week.
Well, let's start with our post-impeachment world now. And what do you make of what we heard from President Trump in this hour-plus celebration, he called it at one point yesterday?
Well, it really was pretty remarkable that he was just in true form in terms of criticizing everyone who was out to get him from his perspective and thanking all of the people who stood by him and supported him. And so it's what we have come to expect from the president. We've seen this repeatedly over the last couple of years where he singles out anyone for pretty harsh comment who stands in his way. And we saw that pretty dramatically yesterday.
I want to listen to a little more of the speech from the president yesterday. Here's a listen.
It was a disgrace. Had I not fired James Comey, who was a disaster, by the way, it's possible I wouldn't even be standing here right now. We caught him in the act. Dirty cops, bad people.
Some observers have pointed out that it sounds like he is saying he fired James Comey, FBI director, to stop an investigation into him. Is that people have read that as an admission of obstruction of justice?
Well, right. And that's something already he had done earlier and, in fact, was included in the Mueller report about with the Russia investigation and obstruction, that the firing of James Comey, at the time he linked it to the pressure about Russia. And so that, again, is something we've heard before. And it's just, I think what was remarkable yesterday, it was just how intense it was and how he just, went on and on and on with this. And I don't know if you saw just within the last couple of hours, but James Comey had an op-ed in the Washington Post where he, said how upsetting that was yesterday to him personally, not so much what the president said, which he said, again, he expected that, but the reaction of the people in the room, that all of these people who, he had known and trusted and, good people, many of them, laughing and going along with this and not walking out when the president started to say these, pretty outrageous things. And so it's an interesting sort of commentary on how people get just caught up in the group and behave in ways that they normally wouldn't.
Senator Mitt Romney notably voted to convict the president on one of the two counts of articles of impeachment. He apparently is no longer with that group. Can you talk about some of the blowback he's gotten?
Well, certainly he's been the target of a lot of the fire. And when he gave his speech on the floor of the Senate explaining that he was going to vote to convict the president on the first article of abuse of power, he said that it was the hardest decision he ever made. And he knew that he was going to receive a lot of negative feedback from people that he respected and worked with. But he said he had to do it because of his sort of moral position and the oath that he took to be a neutral juror for this case. And so he said his religious views and his moral conscience dictated that he had to arrive at that decision. And so there have been people calling for kicking him out of the party and all kinds of other pretty bad things. But he's basically sticking to his position that he did the right thing.
Now, there you have Mitt Romney, Republican Party presidential candidate just in 2012, now ostracized by the Republican Party. As you read it, did Mitt Romney change or did the Republican Party change in those, 8 years now?
Well, I think pretty clearly it's the Republican Party that's changed. The Republican Party has become the party of Trump, and the people who don't want to be associated with President Trump in the Republican Party exact a great price when they stand up to the president. And so pretty clearly on a whole range of issues, the president has moved the Republican Party in a different direction, and it really is a very different party than when Mitt Romney ran for president in 2012.
Are you anticipating impeachment being a big part of the presidential campaign this year? Talk about impeachment, what happened and what didn't happen.
I kind of think not. I think that this will, I suppose it depends on how much more comes out over the next few months. That I'm sure we'll hear from John Bolton. We'll probably hear from some other people as well. So I think it will reappear every now and then. I think that President Trump's conduct in general is going to be a big issue in the campaign. There was just a story today about how he charges Secret Service members $650 a night to stay in his hotels and his property when he travels to like to Mar-a-Lago. And so there'll be things like this that come out, I think, on a regular basis. So President Trump's overall character and conduct, I think, will be an issue. Impeachment itself, I don't think that, I think the Democratic candidates are going to move past this now. I think they'll focus on different things, to focus on health care, the economy, things that voters care more about than impeachment.
Talking to David Cannon, professor of political science at UW-Madison, looking at the fire hose of national news this week. We may come back to some of these issues related to impeachment. Let's turn to the Democratic side of things. And whatever happened in Iowa, I want to give a listen to former DNC chair Tom Perez explaining why he wants a re-canvass of some of the precinct results. Here he is talking on MSNBC last night.
There have been reports, and we've seen in the tabulation process, that there were some questions raised. There was an example of a precinct in Black Hawk County where I think 83 state delegate equivalents were apportioned to Deval Patrick, which was a clear error. And so we all care. We have a shared interest in making sure we have accuracy.
Well, can you talk about what you've seen in the last few days from this weird Iowa caucus outcome?
Oh, my goodness. It was a complete meltdown. It just was, I think the only good thing to come from this is it probably means it's the last Iowa caucus we're going to see. I can't imagine them sticking with this 4 years from now. It seems to me it's really, they need to move to a primary rather than a caucus. Because on so many levels, it really, the process just broke down, starting with the app that many of the precinct captains didn't have, couldn't get to work on their phones. Then the phone lines, which were supposed to be the backup plan, were jammed. They couldn't get through. And then all of the other reporting errors, things that the DNC chair just spoke to of just copying columns wrong over in spreadsheets. And so people end up getting delegates that shouldn't have gotten them. There was another thing that just was in the news today about this, about the satellite caucuses around the state and also out of state even, where Iowa voters participated for the first time in these satellite caucuses. And there were two sets of rules that were actually stated by the Iowa Democratic Party. One set of rules that they employed that gave Bernie Sanders an advantage, and the other official set of rules that wasn't used that would have given a few extra delegates to Mayor Pete. So it just was a complete breakdown in terms of having an election count work in a way that could be seen as working the way it should be working.
Let's talk about the consequences of this now. Republicans were quick to say, hey, you guys can't run one state's caucus effectively. Why should voters count on you to run the country? This was kind of an easy own goal, as they say in the soccer world.
Well, yeah. I mean, one thing I think that listeners have to keep in mind is that the caucus, they have over 1,700 sites around the state, and it's basically a volunteer operation. So this is not like, campaign professionals running this. These are people who are just everyday citizens who volunteer their time to try to make this work. And these are all people who, were trying their best to make this work properly, but they just didn't have the assistance and the training they needed to pull it off. So one thing I think is important to remember is that this wasn't some kind of nefarious plot to undermine the election or anything like that. This was just people trying to do their best that didn't have the tools they needed to conduct the election properly.
And on the other hand, with consequences, is this something that's going to affect the overall delegate count when Democrats meet in Milwaukee this summer?
No, it really won't, because they only have 41 delegates at the convention in Milwaukee, and so that's almost exactly 1% of the total. And if you look right now at the state delegate equivalents, which is the official thing that the state party reports, Mayor Pete and Bernie Sanders are almost exactly tied. Buttigieg is ahead by like less than 2 delegates right now. And so that will translate into the same number of delegates to the Milwaukee convention. And so it really at this point doesn't matter so much how the last few delegates sort out. So even if they do have the re-canvass that people are calling for, it's not likely that anything is going to shift in a way that would affect the actual delegates to Milwaukee.
Talking to David Cannon of UW-Madison's Political Science Department, looking at some of the latest news in national politics. This week marked the end of the Senate impeachment trial of President Trump and confusion coming out of the Iowa Democratic caucuses in New Hampshire coming up a vote on Tuesday. You can join in at 800-642-1234 on either of those topic categories. Are you glad to see the end of the impeachment trial? What do you make of a move from Attorney General Barr to put in place more rules for politically sensitive federal investigations? If you caucused yourself in Iowa this week, what does it look like from where you're sitting? What are your reactions wherever you are to the Iowa caucus? What are you watching for in the primaries now as they start to roll in? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation about two big stories in politics this week: President Trump's acquittal in the Senate impeachment trial and the aftermath, and no winner from the Iowa Democratic caucuses, some confusion there, and the ongoing Democratic primary season. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What's your reaction to the confusion from the Iowa caucuses on the Democratic side? Do you like the idea of re-canvassing those? Or in the scope of things, does it matter? What are your thoughts on President Trump, his statements since the impeachment trial ended? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 with your thoughts and questions. We'll go to your calls now. Mark is with us in Hartford. Mark, hello.
Hi. My comment slash concern, I guess I've seen a lot of people recently calling out the Democratic National Convention, saying that we're going to wind up with a repeat that we did in the last election where, somebody's going to be favored over Bernie Sanders, like people claim that Hillary was. And I just wonder if there's any, potential legitimacy to that, or if that's something that our guest may have noticed.
Mark, thanks for the call. That concern that the Democratic establishment puts its finger on the scale during the primaries, David.
Well, it certainly didn't happen in 2016 in terms of the actual outcome. The Hillary Clinton had a majority of the delegates on the first ballot, didn't need the votes of the superdelegates to put her over the top. The complaint from the Sanders supporters in 2016 was that most of the delegates or superdelegates, a huge proportion, and those are like the party insiders, were supporting Hillary Clinton. So that is true. And if those superdelegates had been decisive in nominating Hillary Clinton, then the Sanders supporters would have had a legitimate beef. But in fact, she did win a straight, flat-out majority of the delegates, fair and square, through the primaries and caucuses. And so there really wasn't anything that did affect the outcome of the election. Now, for this time around, I think the Bernie supporters are a little more nervous because there is some indication that this could be a deadlock convention, that we might not have a winner on the first ballot because there's such a divided field right now. And then with Michael Bloomberg jumping in on Super Tuesday a little bit later, and he's likely to do fairly well in some of those early primaries where he's spent already more than $200 million, it's possible we could end up going to Milwaukee and not having anyone with the majority of the delegates. And if that were to happen, for the first time since they've existed, the superdelegates could play a role. And chances are they wouldn't be enthusiastically behind Bernie Sanders, although some of them are this time. It's definitely not as lopsided as it was in 2016, where an overwhelming majority of them were behind Hillary Clinton. So it's an interesting question in terms of how that plays out. And the other thing that has some people on the other side of the political spectrum within the Democratic Party concerned are these polls right now showing that Bernie Sanders supporters are not likely to support the nominee from the Democratic Party unless it's Bernie Sanders. Something like only 50% range of the Bernie Sanders supporters right now in the primary are saying they will back the nominee, whoever it is. And that really worries other Democrats, because if Sanders is not the nominee and they end up not supporting the who ends up running against President Trump, that could pretty much assure President Trump's reelection.
Thanks, Mark, for that call at 800-642-1234. Talking to David Cannon from UW-Madison. We'll go now to Nate with us in Madison. Nate, hello.
Hi. Well, as far as the caucus is concerned, I think it's going to go into the – on its way into the ash bin of history.
Let's hope.
I really think you just emphasized a very important issue, which is Democrats have got to be educated to the fact that if they don't want another 4 years of the current occupant of the White House, they have got to get together. They have to decide that the priority is a replacement, and that's got to rise above all else. Otherwise, they're going to shoot themselves in the foot again.
Nate, thanks a lot for the call. And David, looking back at, you know, the close margins in some key states, including Wisconsin in 2016, people point toward a lot of reasons for Donald Trump's victory in those states. One is the idea that, hey, maybe some of these Bernie Sanders voters decided not to vote for Hillary Clinton, stayed home, voted for a third party, whatever. Is that something that could be decisive in key swing states if that happened again?
Well, absolutely. I think that is a real possibility, and especially if it ends up being a divisive convention where the, you know, Sanders supporters believe that he was unfairly treated at the convention, then you really could see a split within the party, the type of which, you know, Nate was saying we need to the Democrats need to avoid if they want to be able to beat President Trump. And I think that that's right, that a unified party is going to be necessary going into November for the Democratic Party.
Thanks for that call. Now, that said, David, there was talk, you know, at this stage of the game of, oh, are the Republicans going to end up with a contested convention? And that fell away. It's still pretty early yet, and a lot of people may slide out of that race, maybe even in the next few weeks.
Right. Yeah, I don't think there's going to be any serious opposition to President Trump on the Republican side. In fact, quite a few states have set up the primaries or caucuses where there won't even be anybody else on the ballot against him. And so in Iowa, turnout was very, very low on the Republican side. I think they had something like 30,000 people, like 32,000 showed up to vote on the Republican side, and President Trump got like, you know, 97% of the vote or something. And so I think that's going to be typical of most of the primaries and caucuses around the country, that there won't be any serious opposition to President Trump on the Republican side.
Now, from a historical perspective, we used to have contested conventions all the time, and just doing some history reading is kind of cool. They made for a really wild story to follow. Would it be so bad if we went back to that?
Well, yeah, no, that's where the term smoke-filled room comes from. So, yeah, I'm not sure that's necessarily a good thing. I mean, the last controversial convention the Democrats had was 1968 in Chicago with Hubert Humphrey's nomination and all the Vietnam War protesters outside. But Humphrey got that nomination having, you know, being the incumbent vice president, having basically not entered very many primaries and caucuses because he jumped in pretty late. It was after the assassination of Robert Kennedy. And so Eugene McCarthy's supporters were the ones that time who were really upset that Humphrey could come in as the insider's choice and basically take the nomination. So that really did split the Democratic Party in 1968 and led to the election of Richard Nixon.
Let's bring on one more caller. Dennis is with us in Two Rivers. Dennis, hi.
Hi. As far as the unified party can sound good, but then with the Republicans, a lot of them weren't in favor of Donald Trump. But then when they dropped out, they went along the party line of supporting the front runner. Well, the front runner turned out to be bad news, which turned out to be bad news for all of them. So that could happen to the Democrats also.
Well, but ultimately the front runner, Donald Trump, ended up winning the election. So people have said, hey, what happened to Republicans with Donald Trump could happen to the Democrats with Bernie Sanders. And Donald Trump won. So would that be so terrible for Democrats?
So, yeah, I see what you're saying. So if the, you know, if everyone would unify behind Bernie Sanders as the candidate to run against Donald Trump, then that could, work out the same way it worked out for Trump in 2016, potentially.
Massive hypothetical there, I should say.
Hypothetical, right. And that's certainly possible. And that's definitely the argument that the Sanders supporters are making, right, is that like Donald Trump in 2016, he galvanized a whole group of new voters that typically hadn't been voting that much in presidential elections and appealed to some independents, appealed to some disgruntled Democrats even. And Bernie Sanders supporters argue that he can do the same thing, that he can bring in a whole new group of voters that have been disaffected with politics and will be fired up by his campaign, and that will make up for losing some of those voters in the middle. That's the argument.
Thanks for that call. In our last few moments, David, New Hampshire primary just around the corner. What are you going to be watching for?
Well, I think the big question here is, can Joe Biden kind of resurrect his campaign? It was a big loss for Biden. I mean, the story coming out of Iowa that we haven't really touched on yet, I think that Mayor Pete did much better than people thought he would. Really surprised, basically tying for first place with Bernie Sanders, where Sanders had been expected to win in Iowa, but then just Biden fading to number four, very weak showing there, and he is himself described it as a gut punch. And so I think Biden is not going to win New Hampshire. This is Bernie Sanders' backyard, basically right next door to his home state of Vermont. But I think Biden needs to have a respectable showing there, or he really could be in some trouble. Already there's signs that his fundraising is a little harder to come by, raising some money that he needs. And so I think these are some critical weeks coming up right now for the Biden campaign.
David, thanks a lot for joining us.
You're welcome.
That's David Cannon, professor of political science at UW-Madison, with us for a look at some of the big news in national politics. Coming up Monday on Central Time, once upon a time when the family landline phone would ring, you'd answer it and find out who the call was for. Now that's pretty much gone. Our guest looks at the end of the family landline and how it's changed the way we communicate. That and more Monday on Central Time.